Welcome to Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns. I'm Rosemarie Kroonman, the founder and CEO of the Center for Advancing Innovation, and I'm thrilled to welcome Tom Stackhouse on the podcast. Thank you, Tom, for coming.
Thanks, Rosemarie. Thanks for having me on.
I'm thrilled to have you. So just a little bit of background about Tom, which is definitely not going to describe him in the detail that he should be described in. Dr. Stackhouse is the director for the Technology Transfer Center at the National Cancer Institute. He oversees all technology transfer activities such as licenses, CRADAs, and also manages all of NCI's intellectual property portfolio for NCI and 9 other NIH institutes. In addition, the Technology Transfer Center includes an invention development and marketing team. Tom has been the lead for several creative key NCI initiatives, such as the Breast Cancer Startup Challenge, which launched 11 startups in partnership with the Center for Advancing Innovation around NCI's technology and won the DHHS Secretary's Pick Award for Innovation. He has also received the National Institutes of Health Award of Merit for his outstanding management of the NCI Frederick Technology Transfer Office and for his efforts on a team that developed the SBIR Technology Transfer Program for the Institute. He received the 2012 Mid-Atlantic Region Technology Transfer Representative of the Year Award. Prior to his career in technology transfer, Dr. Stackhouse worked for a major pharma company, and he was part of the NCI research team of scientists who discovered the VHL tumor suppressor gene. And that, like I said before, this does not describe Tom's many, many talents and his background. So again, I'm just thrilled to have you. Tom, would you like to mention anything else about your background?
Sure. It might be interesting to the audience and maybe know how I came into tech transfer because I started out as a research scientist. And so I received my PhD in biochemistry from UC Davis. From there, I moved into a small pharmaceutical company where I learned a lot about GMP manufacturing and what it takes to actually bring something to market. This happened to be the clotting factor for hemophiliacs. So I kind of got the taste there for the business of science. I then moved over to the National Cancer Institute, where I was part of a team in the laboratory that cloned the VHL tumor suppressor gene. And that was some pretty exciting times. This was back in the mid-90s. From there, though, I continued to have strong interest in the business of doing science. And so I moved over into the tech transfer office for the National Cancer Institute. I can tell that I have loved it. I can tell you that I've loved it ever since. It is an incredible place to be sitting in that bridge, if you will, between the basic discoveries, the exciting discoveries that are happening in the research laboratories, to help transition them out then to the where they're making some impact for public good. So that's just a little bit about my background.
Excellent. So what gets you really excited to go to work every day?
What gets me excited to go to work every day? I think it's the fact is that we are in a really exciting time with the technologies, particularly related to life sciences. And so there's every time I come in, there's just always something interesting that's happening, something exciting, whether it's even a simple agreement that we've been able to get in some new technology from an outside organization, or we've been able to share something with another organization. Also, just the partnerships. People are very interested in what the National Cancer Institute is doing. And so there's just always seems to be something new and exciting. We also have a diverse portfolio because we do serve 9 other institutes here at NIH. So that keeps life really interesting. So I would say what gets me up in the morning is being able to see progress and in an innovative way. I'm always excited when someone comes to me with a brand new idea and they just want to give it a try. So that's something I'm open to and excited about when I get up in the morning.
So, Tom, you have this vast amount of experience across all these different types of inventions in one of the most complicated areas, life sciences, since it could take 13 years to get a drug to market, and you know, devices could 5 years. And you know, there's regulatory hurdles, there's a bunch of challenges. And then also, you know, you have the situation where you have these early stage technologies that NCI has developed. And then they need to be transferred out to companies or startups that need to advance them forward. What are some of the challenges you've run into or the most significant challenges in bridging the invention to commercialization gap?
Yeah, I think you basically touched on one of the main ones, and that is a lot of our portfolio, which is, you know, there's several hundred technologies in our portfolio just for the National Cancer Institute, are very early stage. And so they are very high risk, if you will. to move them out into the business world. So the challenge has been, you know, really, how can we provide ways to move them forward from the basic discovery, which is really what NCI is all about. Our research program here is really about discovery. We don't make products. We don't sell products. That's not who we are. We're a government organization. So how can we find innovative ways of getting things out there? And I can give you an example of one, Rosemary, that as you're well aware of, is the creation of the Startup Challenges. And this was back in 2013. I think it was an innovative way of taking an opportunity where you have this unique niche to create startups that can add value to a very early stage technology and help bring it to the next go, no go decision, if you will, in that developmental pathway. And I think that the challenges that we've done three of them so far, have been quite successful in doing that. It is a high risk area, particularly in the health field. As you mentioned, it takes, you know, often over 13 years to get a product to market from its initial discovery. So I think clearly one of our toughest hurdles is getting to that next stage in the developmental process where you can de-risk it enough for a company to grab onto it and to move it forward. And I think the startups, creating startups around our technology, has been one model to do that that's been successful.
Well, it's an incredibly creative model as well. I mean, launching startups from thin air through a challenge is incredibly innovative.
It's really difficult for the federal government, right?
So yeah, but if anybody could do it, you could. And actually, it's an interesting story about how when we came up with the idea together, mm-hmm. Center for Advancing Innovation, NCI, Tom marshaled that through, I think, at a record pace, 3 months to get the approvals through the government. So that's amazing. So you know, that is a new platform to get inventions to market. What do you think some of the other opportunities are for technology transfer going forward? You know, if you were to look at the, you know, the Green Book, we were talking about that earlier last week. You know, the Green Book is enormous. Oh my gosh, it's so comprehensive in terms of the opportunities that technology transfer has. What do you see as the future?
So I think, you know, NIST did a fantastic job on the green paper. They really pulled together what have been, you know, in discussions probably for 10 years for tech transfer and how we can, you know, make it a better environment for advancing technologies out of the laboratories, whether they're federal or university, into companies and producing products. And it doesn't just focus on healthcare. It's across the board. And so I would say one of the things I find most interesting on there is part of what we were just talking about is developing an entrepreneurial environment, right? So really creating more of an entrepreneurial spirit, particularly within the federal sector, having a better understanding of what that is in these government laboratories. It's not something that is just inherent in the culture of the government laboratories, but I think it is something, as we have seen, that is really important and it's critical for moving technologies, particularly cutting edge, innovative technologies out into the public. And I think we are recognizing that more and more. And the Green Paper specifically points to several groups who are organizing, trying to find ways to improve entrepreneurial training and entrepreneurial spirit, if you will, in the laboratory system. So,
what do you think is the key to the entrepreneurial spirit? Now, I want to give you an example of something that I think is kind of interesting. So another challenge that we're running right now is called SCALE. It stands for Supply Chain and Logistics Enterprises. It's in the partnership with the Walton family. And Alice Walton herself requested that all teams, every single team in our challenge, has an artist. And she's the visionary behind Crystal Bridges, which is, I think, one of the top three museums in the United States. Depending upon which list you look at, it's an amazing experiential type museum. But we have found it very, very interesting putting engineering people together with these artists.
Exactly.
And artists of all kinds, you know, musicians, mm-hmm. and culinary artists too. I mean, you can really look at it from many different perspectives.
Right.
So what are some big picture ideas from your perspective from an entrepreneurial standpoint to inject that entrepreneurial spirit into the federal labs to drive more commercialization? What do you think the levers are or the the secrets are? I mean, is it the teams? Is it, you know, mixing it up a bit like that Alice Walton's doing with the artists?
I think part of it is just bringing all the stakeholders together so that they can understand each other and begin to have some common language. So I think one of our biggest barriers is we have very different language almost. It's almost like we're speaking two different languages to each other. And so one of the things I'd like to see is for, and we're working on that internally here at the National Cancer Institute with our own investigators, is to begin to engage them more on how we can benefit them by finding them partners. It's not just about taking an invention and developing it. It's also about developing partners so that you can create that innovative ecology, if you will, or environment where you have these different groups coming together, you know, physicists with biological folks, with medical folks, coming up with brand new ideas. We sort of explored that at NCI with our nanotechnology characterization efforts. We created centers across the country that had just that very design, was to bring these different people who normally don't talk to each other and doing their own thing, coming together. And that's where that's the nexus, if you will, where the real creativity happens and you see real innovation take place. From my perspective, I think bringing those groups together, creating an environment around them so that they can communicate with each other and share ideas from their unique perspectives, that's, I think, key.
So there's lots of ways of doing that.
Yep.
HHMI, they have this, it's a kind of a restaurant beer joint inside of their space in Virginia. There's conferences you could do it with. There's, you know, obviously the typical CRADAs where you can bring in particular parties. The consortium that you mentioned, the nanotechnology consortium. From your perspective, are these models the model of the future? What is a model that you think could construct a common language and also bring the parties together? Or do you think it's going to be organic and it's all of the above?
I think from my perspective, I think what I'm trying to do, at least, and this is not necessarily the only way or the right way, is to bring together from a federal laboratory perspective, the right folks to be in the environment to advance some of our technologies or to partner with some of our laboratories to think innovatively. Mm-hmm. So putting together half day or full day opportunities that are nearby the federal laboratories so they make it doesn't cause hardship for the scientists at the laboratory to get there, for
right.
example, and to engage. We've created an invention development and marketing unit within the Tech Transfer Center here. And one of the things that Michael Salgaller done, who is the leading that unit, is put together this showcase where we can bring together the folks needed to support small business, to support startups, as they look at our inventions coming out of the National Cancer Institute and some of our sister institutes, and to see, do they want to take those? So it's not only showcasing the technologies, it's bringing that environment together and having folks there discussing things. For example, you were on a panel that was very well attended, and I think people learned from that a little bit about what it is to be in an accelerator, an incubator kind of environment. Most of the federal scientists who are in the lab don't know what that's like. They don't know what it's like to start a business and the concerns that the startup has versus the concern that the lab has. So having a showcase like that, for example, that Michael has just done a wonderful job putting together, is an important way of doing that. Face-to-face, I think getting together is important.
And that was incredibly successful. I really enjoyed it, meeting all the different people and having everyone there at once, to your point.
Exactly.
You really learn a lot. So it was very successful. So, you know, I guess if you were to look at your vision of success 5 to 10 years from now, looking at commercializing and leveraging the scientific value of federally funded inventions, you know, would you see a magnificent change? I have fantasies of it. I have ideas about what, you know, enormous systematic changes could be at, you know, across all the federal agencies, universities, hospitals. You know, I always wonder if there's another model and what it would take to get there.
So I think that we do not take advantage of the ability of how easily we can be connected electronically, right? So I think that the future to me would hold opportunities for large databases to consolidate a lot of the information that are coming out of federally funded research activities so that people can easily access them. And I think even a part of that, thinking innovatively, is artificial intelligence and how that might even play a role just in that aspect of creating a place where all of this information can be stored, accessed easily by everyone, and understanding then a process going forward. If we had uniformity with creativity in that, I think that that could go a long way to really accelerating the exciting discoveries that we see out of the federal R&D dollars into commercial products that are benefiting the public, particularly in my case, the public health.
Yeah, wouldn't it be awesome if you, well, an inventor has this invention, you know, he or she is working.
Right.
And then that person automatically knows here are the top three partners they should be working with in order to advance this more substantially. And also at the same time, you know, by the way, here's some of the work that's been done before in this area. And this part worked and this part didn't work. And, you know, one thing that I would love to see is in the public domain are the things that also did not work, because that can inform us to not do that again or to do it differently. So,
right. You know, getting the data out there, I mean, we still live on the publications, right? Our scientists are still, you know, that's their bread and butter is to get those publications out there. And that's not a bad system, but how can we mine what's going out there? You know, when it's cutting edge like that, it's hitting the streets, how can we quickly mine that and move it forward so that it can be pushed into something that's going to be successful in the marketplace?
There's got to be a way to monetize that. I mean, too, you know, create an extra layer of value for our $140 to $160 billion because we're, you know, we're getting it out there more quickly. But at the same time, you know, it could come back. So,
And I know we've had discussions with John DeMent, who's the chair of the Federal Laboratory Consortium for Tech Transfer, and they're looking at how to do that with a database that's, you know, completely searchable of all of the technologies that come out of the federal laboratories. Right now, you almost have to go to every single federal laboratory and search them individually if you're looking for something. So having some of that consolidate would be a big step forward.
Yeah, and you know, the way we've done it probably isn't ideal either. What we have done is built these software interfaces to WIPO database and USPTO database, but that doesn't, of course, get everything, because it's only things that are patented, you know. And then we have to layer on all the PubMed data, and that's a lot of manual effort.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just in closing, Tom, is there anything else you'd like to add about, you know, where you would like to see things go in the future for tech transfer and commercialization?
Well, I think from my perspective, because I'm in the healthcare area, is I'm going to be moving forward to try and gather data around the benefit of it as coming out, the research coming out of the federal R&D. So you see a lot of what we call impact reports out there. And a lot of them, of course, are focused on the economy. That's one of the reasons tech transfer came into being, was to stimulate the American economy by having tech transfer laws created to allow the transfer of federally developed technologies out there quickly and efficiently. But for me, from a healthcare perspective, one of the things I'd like to be able to grab a hold of is information around what is the benefit of the tech transfer of health-related products to the health of the American public or the world, for that matter. I think that that data coming back in will be very informative, not only from the economic perspective, you know, numbers of days lost because of sickness or whatever being improved, if you will, but also I think from a perspective of, are we even moving in the right areas? Are we really having the right area of impact in health? So I would like to see those numbers generated, and we're going to be working on that in the next year. So hopefully we'll have more to talk about then. But I think that gathering that kind of data around the health impact of tech transfer would be extremely valuable, particularly for us here at NIH.
Interesting. So Tom, if someone wants to help you out with that and provide you some case studies, how would you like them to, you know, what is your ask of the people who are listening to this podcast? You can ask for anything.
Well, sure. I mean, if someone is out there and has successfully moved a technology, a healthcare technology, particularly out of NIH, and would like to share some of what's happened there, whether it be jobs created or lost time at the workplace improved, I would love to have them share that information. We will probably be doing more of a general outreach, particularly to folks that we have engaged in partnerships, particularly licensing, for some inquiries. And I would just ask that if they do receive one from us or from one of our contractors, that they would respond, you know, quickly and as fully as possible, because I think that's just valuable information that we can gather to help us improve what we're doing going forward.
Okay, well, we'll get it out there on Twitter and on LinkedIn and make sure that we have information out about how to provide this information seamlessly to Tom and his team. And Tom, I just want to thank you very, very much for your insights today. I'm very grateful for your time and keep up the awesome
work. Thank you, Rosemary.
Take care.
Always a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you.